You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 566, recorded on September 11th, 2018. Digital Bullet Journals. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Last week was Sally's turn at bullet journals. This week, Martin takes the controls and talks about digital bullet journaling. Lots of news in tech, an exciting conference coming up next year that you're going to want to get on your calendar right now. Tips, picks, a ministry resource about bullet journaling, you guessed it, and OneNote, community feedback, and a video of the week from the paperless student. All that and more coming right up. Stay tuned. And we are back again. And I'm joined by Sally Draper, as usual. Sally is in the great Midwest for just another week. The time flew by, Sally.
It did. And of all the ironies that are possible, I'm in the chief technology officer's office. I've commandeered it. And you aren't here, Martin. Where are you?
I've been thrown out. Yes. They finally come to their senses after 14 years.
Right.
And put Sally in charge.
No, nope, afraid not. We're all that would the be a scary thing.
No, I'm in my home office, even though Sally's in Milwaukee, in my office, in fact. I was babysitting some furnace repair work and went a little bit long. So doing it from the comfort of my dining room table.
So. Good thing we're equipped for remote contact with one another. Just whipped out the old plan B for today, and it worked just fine.
We had to dust
fine.
That off and remember how we did it. So yep. Just in prep for next week. So
next week,
you are departing.
Right.
You're moving south.
That's right. Next week I'll
be broadcasting.
Do you call
it moving? Or do you relocate? Or what do you call that?
Yeah, I don't call it anything. We're rolling out on Saturday morning, and we'll be in St. Louis bound. So looking forward to being in the great city of St. Louis and seeing some sights there in our off time as we continue our work remotely.
On your way down to the south, just in time for hurricane season, it sounds like.
Yeah, they're going to get past all that by the time we get there. There's actually a beautiful balloon festival in my home city in about mid-October, so we're looking forward to getting down there in time for that.
That's Natchez.
Natchez on the Mississippi. That's right.
And that is toward the southern part of the state, is it not?
Yeah, it's down in the southwest corner. So Mississippi has a little corner down there. It's about 2 hours straight north of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Okay. Well, God go with you on your travels. It's been wonderful having you in the same building for these 3 weeks. Let's get reacquainted with your teammates and it's kind of nice.
Yep,
and we turned the showers off for you. We've turned the sunshine on, so all's good.
Yep, we have.
And we got to hear
Milwaukee
about your bullet journaling last week. That was actually an actual treat, and I could see it right in front of me, the real deal.
That's right, and I'm looking forward to hearing about yours, which is quite different from the way I bullet journal. So we'll see a real variety.
I think different in a few ways. I don't know if I have as much fun with mine as you do, but maybe I do on the tech stuff. I enjoy that piece of it. So really, one of the primary differences is that, two primary differences off the top of my head. First of all, I've just started the process, so I don't have a lot of experience behind the bullet journal wheel. But the other big difference is I touch no paper. I do it all digitally. And I don't know if that's a no-no or not in bullet journaling world. I get the sense that bullet journaling is kind of do it however you want. So I felt that if I wanted to do it digitally, or at least to try to do it digitally, I should give it a shot. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about, how I do it via iPad and Apple Pencil. But there are some considerations maybe before we dive into the how. And One of those is you're working with technology, so it's not just like opening a book. There needs to be a charge in your device, not just your iPad. You happen to use an iPad for this process, but also the device you use to write on it, and that's an Apple Pencil in my case. So those all require a charge to work, and unfortunately, if they don't, then you're kind of stuck. Couple other things to consider is technology can be more fragile. So you have to be a little bit more careful. You're dealing with electronics, you're dealing with glass, you're dealing with things that aren't made to be, you know, tossed in the back seat or, you know, dropped on the floor from the table. I'm sure your notebook would be fine in those kinds of circumstances. Very durable in that respect, but not so much the iPad or even the Apple Pencil. Another consideration would be the expense, although I'm thinking that bullet journalers can spend quite a bit of money bullet journaling, whether it's digital or analog, don't you
there
think?
There is that weakness for washi tape and pens that does That's come right. into play. But, you know, typically those are pretty low priced. I was in Walmart this weekend and they had pens that called out to me and they were on sale, you know, so that was a good thing. I saved my husband right. some money. So,
yeah, so the little things mm-hmm. That bring you joy. And then finally, the last thing maybe to consider if you're thinking about kind of doing a digital, whether it's a bullet journal or task management or project management, stuff needs to be backed up. It's ones and zeros, and those ones and zeros can get corrupted or go away or go missing or whatever. So you usually need a backup. And I don't mean like plan B. I normally mean just a way to get it back in the same digital shape it was when it left you. So those were kind of some of the things that went through my head. I have done paper journaling before. I've got notebooks full of stuff. Even after kind of thinking digital was the way to go. But I think I'm fairly happy with some of the shortcomings, maybe some of the things that you have to consider before moving into something like that. So,
yeah, you saying that backup thing, Martin, made me think I really don't have a backup
That's right.
process for my paper
no
journalist.
Backup.
Unless I took photos of things and stored some imagery of what was in my paper journal. And and I actually, as you were talking, I thought of one disadvantage to the paper side. And that is if you invest a lot in the paper journal and you get to the end of it, it's really hard to transfer that to a new bullet journal or whatever. You know, you'd have to rewrite it all or whatever.
Right.
And you could actually kind of copy paste things, I'm guessing.
Yep. You kind of have an infinite resource, you know, if you do use the right digital tools. And speaking of tools, that's probably one of the biggest choices you make in addition to kind of the hardware side, because there are different choices. You don't have to use an iPad or an Apple Pencil. But the software is kind of important, and it does need to support handwriting. So I think bullet journaling, although I've seen bullet journals that are typed, those are vastly in the minority, and that's not what I do. I do a hand, you know, written journal. But the ones that kind of stand out, and I've mentioned a couple of these on the show in the past, Notability was the one that I started with. OneNote is the one I'm using now. Another one that is popular with digital bullet journalers, if you do some Googling or look at some YouTube videos, is GoodNotes. There are a couple on the Windows side, so if you're not into the Apple stuff, there's a product called Nebo, and another one, interestingly enough, called Index Cards. And we'll put a link in the show notes to an article that talks about all those different options. So if you're Mac or PC or iOS or Android, I think there's something out there that would support your bullet journaling
So I'm familiar with the Notability app. I have that one on my iPad, and I know it can. It has a lot of versatility. You can include images and audio recordings and all kinds of cool things in there. What made you start there, and then what made you switch to OneNote?
The handwriting was rated real highly in my research on Notability. And Notability is not free. It's not super expensive, but it's not free. And another reason that I chose it at the time was it did have a cross-platform capability. So not on the Windows side, but at least on the iOS and Mac side, so and the iPhone side, so you had different apps that would be available wherever you went. So also it had one of the key features that I was looking for was searchability. Mm-hmm. So if it could recognize my chicken scrawls was kind of one of those requirements. So searchability had some cross-platform, was easy to use, was not overkill. So that was kind of where I started.
So is that what you mean by handwriting, the fact that it could recognize your handwriting was something?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sure.
I have kind of a mix between cursive and print. It's kind of my own little style that I've and a severe backhand, which my teachers could never cure me of. So it's kind of hard to read. But Notability and OneNote, which is the tool I use now, really do an awesome job for that. You can search on words that I can hardly recognize myself, and it will make a pretty good prediction on finding it. So, which is kind of important to me. That was one of my requirements, that you know, I'd be able to not necessarily have to remember when or where I wrote something, but I could just pull up a search box and type it in. You know, where are those meeting notes? You know, when I met with Jim or Dan or Julie or Sally, and I could typically find those, or a date or some kind of key phrase, something like that. A couple other requirements that I had, I mentioned cross-platform. And that's one of the reasons I like OneNote, is that you've got a OneNote application, which is a Microsoft product, but plays well on the iPad, plays well on Android and iPhones, has a Windows app, has a web-based app. So really, there's almost no place that you are that you can't get your stuff. And it is cloud-based, which would be another requirement, so that that stuff is not just stored or locked into one device or one location, but can be shared across multiple platforms. And that's kind of a backup in and of itself, that it is cloud-based. And OneNote has really come a long way in their online tools, almost feature parity with their desktop app. So that was another reason that I really kind of migrated that way. A couple other requirements that I was looking for when I was starting was quick access. I need to be able to jump right into it. And you can do that with the iPad, just with a finger press and a tap, and you're right into your OneNote or Notability for that matter. Another requirement I had was the ability to easily erase or undo. I don't want it to be a real burden to try and kind of backtrack. And I think you use an erasable pen, Sally?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of important, I've found. And digitally, that's obviously easy to do, or should be easy to do, but it's not always, depending on what tool you're using.
I figured out the other day, Martin, that things change. Being able to erase is a good idea.
Just the other day we figured this out.
Yeah, just the other day.
And finally, my final requirement before I jump into a little bit of the process is it needed to mimic as much as possible natural writing. It couldn't feel like you were, like in days gone by, with the stylus and the nib or whatever, trying to scrawl something out on a glass surface. So I've talked about that in the past. I know on the iPad and the Surface, Surface Pro, they both have really good writing experiences and good companion writing instruments, the Apple Pencil or the, I don't know if they call it the Surface Pen or maybe it's a Surface Pen. While I would say it's not quite as good as the Apple Pencil, it's also not quite as expensive as the Apple Pencil. And then I think a pick of mine a few weeks back was a screen protector, which kind of mimics paper. It's got a matte finish and kind of sounds different. So it kind of slows your pen down a little bit like paper would. So it's you know, it's got more of a feel of some resistance. So it's not just your pen skating across your page or your tablet. It it mimics it. It's not exactly the same, but it's close enough. And then a couple other things that I kind of have added to make it even more convenient would be a way to the Apple Pen. One of the big downfalls of the Apple Pencil is it doesn't come with an easy way to store it or slip it in someplace. That's kind of an add-on. So I think I've talked about the stylus sling before. It's just a little kind of elastic thing that goes around the cover and you just slide it in. And then I use the Apple Smart Cover if I do need to pull it out for typing. So those were my requirements.
Pretty lengthy list.
It is.
I imagine and, it was kind of hard to live up to that stuff.
It was. Actually, the options aren't too numerous. So it was, if you have a list like this and you don't check all the boxes, you're kind of left with nothing other than paper. How did I'm just curious, Sally, how did you choose your system? I mean, there are a bunch of systems out there. Is this just one of the most popular? What did you call it the other day?
Well, I have an Erin Condren notebook.
The Erin Condren, right. Yep. Yeah.
And I found Erin Condren, well, backing up, I used to be a Franklin planner. I don't know if you ever did the paper Franklin planners, but
the
back
daytimers.
In the 90s. Yeah. And had been pretty hooked on the concept, and it had helped me a lot back then. And this just was a popular one among a lot of female type blogs that I follow. It's very artsy and fun design, and that's actually how I found it. I've used them probably for 5 or more years now, so pretty sold on her products. I've tried different things. I like the amount of space and the layout and stuff. And now that I'm doing my own, I can kind of design the layout myself. And so it's very versatile.
Good. Yeah. It's fun to find something that works and you stick with it and you just get real comfortable with it. And that's really the part of the barrier to productivity is, you know, the tool is fighting you. And if you can find something that doesn't, then you've checked one box at least off. So I wanted to talk a little bit about my process, and I don't know if you talked too much about it last week, because bullet journaling is bullet journaling, and there are different ways to do it, but I've kind of modified things a little bit, and actually, you mentioned something the other day that I've started to do. Normally, you'd put a dot for your tasks.
A bullet, yeah. And,
right, a bullet for your tasks on your daily log, and you said something the other day that kind of resonated with me. Don't put a dot there or a bullet if you really haven't engaged with the task yet, so you haven't touched it. Only do that, and that's what I'm doing now. And I don't know if you follow that practice, you know, to the letter or not, but so if I've got something that really I haven't touched, it just kind of sits there without any kind of, I mean, it's on its own line. So,
so we're like
it's
the non-bullet journalists.
Right. I think so. And it's your fault.
Yes.
So when I touch it, you know, start it, then it gets a dot. And then obviously when I complete it, you know, it gets an X or a caret if it gets moved, you know, someplace else. It goes to the next week or goes to a monthly or, you know, some other location or some other list. So I found that to be actually very helpful. I use circles for events. So I will plot my events on the calendar for that day or for that week. One thing I get to do, and you probably do this too, using different colors, I meld my personal and work bullet journals into one. But I do that with colors. So blue is the color for work. Green is the color for home. So I can easily track, you know, what is a home task and what is a work task by context. And I just use red for meeting notes or just notes in general to differentiate those as well. And the only other symbol I use is a W. And I don't think that's standard bullet journal jargon either, but I use that for waiting for items. So if I've asked somebody to do something or I'm waiting for something to happen so I don't lose track of it, I'll note it in the bullet journal and put a W before it so that I can always go back to that and say, oh, this hasn't happened yet. Another way to do that would be a whole different list, but yeah. I find it better to do it in line.
Do you transfer those week to week then, or are you just always going back looking for your W's?
No, I always put it in. I always transfer it week to week.
Yeah, and you'd have to.
It's fairly easy. You can cut and paste or just rewrite it. And they, you know, bullet journals will say, you know, it's good good therapy to rewrite some things, kind of reinforces it and, you know, kind of gives you a little motivation to stop rewriting it every week. So I do carry that over. I could cut and paste, but I mostly just rewrite. And then I have two other digital lists right now, one for meetings. So all my meeting notes go in there. And then whether that be one-on-one or group meetings, whatever, team meetings. And then I have something called collections, which I think is a bullet journal term. And I have things like blog post ideas or restaurants I'd like to visit or wines that I like, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't do shopping lists in my bullet journal. I think you mentioned you did that. I put those in the Reminders app on my iPhone, and I share that with my wife. And then I can also set reminders there. So I like that feature. And it can remind me at a certain day and time. Can also remind me at a certain location. So when I get home, I can say, you know, remind me to call mom. And so I like that feature. A bullet journal doesn't offer that kind of functionality. So that's kind of the process, at least that I use at this point. Again, just trying to figure things out.
You mentioned collections, and I don't know if I spent very much time talking about that last time, Martin, but that's one of the reasons why I haven't necessarily consolidated all in one notebook, going back to that concept of when the notebook's over, your collections are kind of trapped there. So you have this great list of restaurants you want to visit or whatever. Right. And, you know, do you tear it out and staple it in the next notebook? Do you rewrite the whole entire thing, you know, starting over or what? And so that is definitely an advantage I think you have with the digital side of things. We have checklists for when we're getting ready to travel or when we get to our next destination, how to set up, how to take down things, and making sure we don't forget anything in the process. And those I don't want to lose and as the notebooks turn over or whatever. So that's definitely an advantage.
Makes sense. Yep. Just a couple other things I wanted to mention about what I do, and this is not just specific to bullet journaling, but a weekly review I find is really important, and I do a weekly review. I set aside an hour every Friday morning to kind of do some hygiene, just make sure things are up to date, things are checked off, I haven't forgotten anything. I'll work through my calendar just to make sure that I haven't forgotten any promises that I've made or appointments or, you know, things that kind of are just creeping around in the back of my mind but need to get down into the bullet journal. So that's really an important thing that I try and do every week. So I put that as an appointment to myself every Friday morning so that I'm ready kind of for the next week. So I go through that process. Another thing that I do, and I don't know how this will work, but I've started to, kind of a fun thing, use the top of each daily or of each weekly log, the day where I put a whole week at a time, at the top I try and include some kind of picture. And my intent is to kind of force myself to use my camera, whether that's on my iPhone or my DSLR, and just put an image there that I'm proud of or would remind me of the season or something that's timely, whatever, just to kind of keep me in the habit 52 times a year of taking a photo, maybe doing some editing on it, having a little fun with it. And then that's one thing I like about the digital journal is I can just copy and paste it right there, resize it, rotate it, you know, whatever. And you kind of do that with your little handy dandy photo printer, right?
Yeah, a Zinc printer that's pairs with my phone via Bluetooth, and it'll let me easily print little 2-inch by 3-inch images. Sometimes I make collages, and they're even smaller, you know, when I cut them apart, and they are on sticker paper with my HP Sprocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're little postage stamp size, mm-hmm. really, aren't they? How do they hold up? Do they have they worn pretty well when they get pressed between pages and
yeah,
such?
Yeah, actually, I was wondering about that because I've had other photo specific, you know, printers made for printing photos, little small 4x6 size and things like that, and you could just touch them and things would scratch off on the picture and all this. But these have been really good, so
good.
I'm very pleased with it. It prints a little dark, so you really need to lighten your images, and they actually kind of built that into their Magic Editor. If you just go through that process, then I'm real pleased with the results from it.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. The only other thing that I would mention, and we mentioned it last week, is there are still other tools that I use, and one of them is Trello for tasks in in the office there, our team project or team-based tasks. And I don't not always have a one-for-one relationship in the bullet journal. Sometimes I will. If it's a singular task, it doesn't need any visibility beyond that. But sometimes it's more just high level. Trello is still a big part of my to-do and daily task management.
Yep, I'm a Trello believer as well, and I can get that on my phone, so it's always with me. That was one of my questions, you know, if you've adopted this OneNote methodology, do you rely on your phone to take notes on when you're out of touch with your iPad, or do you take your iPad with you everywhere you go?
To meetings and such, I will take it wherever I go. If I'm, you know, not in work mode or whatever, or a little bit more kind of out of the office, I will just have my phone. And OneNote obviously is on the phone. It doesn't work. You know, there is no stylus for the iPhone, and the screen's a little small, but you can obviously take text-based notes or voice notes even in OneNote. So that's sometimes what I will do, as well as a reminder or whatever, just a quick way to get in there. And what I'll normally do is take that in my weekly review and translate that into, you know, something with a, you know, more formal structure to it. So
I was kind of laughing at myself the other day that I've been missing my Post-it notes. I'm sure they're available here in the office, but I don't really tap into office supplies here so much if I'm just here for a short period of time. And I haven't had any Post-it notes at my disposal. And I was thinking I really shouldn't be using Post-it notes. I should be writing in my journal. And do you just totally go paper-free, Martin? Do you use Post-it notes ever in addition
only
to the system?
Only as a last resort.
The drags there.
Yeah, if I'm on the phone and I can't, I have to really scratch something down real quick, I'll do that. But I really don't use Post-it notes at all.
So. Wow. Life without Post-its. All digital.
It can happen, yes. So that's our bullet journal stories, and we'll keep everybody posted as things change or updated. But I'm pretty happy, with the process so far.
It's cool
kind of excited
to hear
about some of the things.
The productivity guy that he's now a bullet journalist.
Nah, I wouldn't call myself that, but I probably spend more time thinking about productivity than being productive. Sometimes
it's really fun to plan it.
It
is. Envision it.
Yeah, you just look at some of the YouTube videos for bullet journalers, and they spend a lot of time getting ready for the next month.
Yeah, even those that are doing digital artsy, they do the same kind of spreads and everything, all in Photoshop and all this. They get serious about their art.
They're turning PowerPoint on its head to do some of this stuff. So it's crazy.
But it is.
Anyway, it's kind of fun. I find it fun to talk about, too. So if any of you are bullet journalers out there or have different digital techniques that you use, let us know, and we'd be happy to revisit.
Yep.
Let's move on, Sally, to news and tech.
And we have quite a bit of news this week. It's funny, when we do our planning on Thursdays prior to the show, it seems like we have a really difficult time finding like things that are in the news.
There's nothing going on, and then now we have a list of four.
I don't know. You just have to wait till Tuesday, and all the floodgates open. But anyway, over the past week, we noticed a few stories that we wanted to bring to our listeners' attention. First of all, Animoto was in the news. And for those that aren't familiar, Animoto is an online video creation tool. It's sweet spot is kind of a slideshow turned up, really stylish and fun with different themes. So mostly photos that get incorporated into a video slideshow. And I know a lot of teachers use it. You can get education accounts and have accounts for your students and all kinds of things like that. So we've talked about Animoto over the years, Martin. Unfortunately, the news this time isn't as good as in the past because they are the latest company to have a data breach. And in the process, people's names, dates of birth, email, even their passwords, which were hashed and salted, were exposed, and recently they announced geolocation data was exposed as well. So if you have an Animoto account, you definitely want to head over there and change your password, and you know, consider the fact that you should always have unique passwords for each account you create. But if by chance that password was used on other accounts, you're definitely going to want to update those other accounts as well.
Another reason to never reuse a password.
Definitely.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. And there was some news around electric scooters, an interesting topic that we were talking about, and then all of a sudden it was in the news.
Yeah, there's an article on The Verge that is talking about Lyft, which is a ride-sharing company, rolling out its first electric scooters. And there are a number of companies doing this, but Lyft is one of the major players now. They're doing this in Denver as a rollout. Kind of an interesting concept. So rather than calling for a Lyft or a ride, you go find a scooter. And these electric scooters, they say they've got about 350 scooters initially across the city, including 100 scooters in the city's what they call opportunity zones, which are designated as low income and underserved by public transportation. But there's an app, and you can find where the nearest scooter is, what its charge is. And these things are actually pretty cool. They go about 15 miles an hour, have a range of about 15 miles. And you just pick one up, and you have to unlock them with the app. I guess scooters cost $1 to unlock and then 15 cents for each minute of riding. So it works for your Lyft account. In Denver, they're just going to be available for rent 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., but I've heard other cities just kind of have them around the city 24/7, and then they hire people to come around and pick them up and charge them up, and or pay people, even volunteers to come in, and they'll pay them through their whatever account and drop them off in some designated zone. So interesting. My son has an electric scooter. He has his own. He bought one. He lives down in Austin, which you'd expect to see some electric scooters in Austin, I guess. So I think weather has a lot to do with it. I don't know that you're going to see a lot of electric scooters in January in Milwaukee, but you never know. But he takes it because his commute, parking downtown is a pain in Austin. So he takes it to about, he takes a car into about 5 miles, 3 miles from the city, something like that, a parking area that's free, and then takes his scooter the rest of the way downtown. So he zips along at, I'm sure, pretty close to 15 miles an hour. He said it's kind of scary because you're sharing the road, you know, with cars and pedestrians who aren't expecting you, and it's nuts. But Lyft is getting in the game here.
Wow, wow. Have you done the Lyft / Uber thing, Martin?
I never have. Not that I'm afraid to do it. I just have not had a reason to do it. Normally, if I'm, you know, traveling on business, I'm there long enough where I'm renting a car, and we have a pretty good deal with Enterprise. So I'm not adverse to it. How about you?
No, I haven't. Although family members were traveling in, I think in San Francisco within the last month and talking about taking Uber and what a great experience it was. I just see, you know, we're living the future now, folks. I mean, scooters and Uber and all this kind of stuff.
Self-driving cars.
Yeah, exactly. Very different world.
All right. We have two more news and tech items, Sally.
Yeah, don't rush it. There's so much to talk about. One is an article from PC Mag, and it's around the fact that there is a new version of Google Chrome web browser, and it's not that they release these that often. This is Chrome's 10 years old, and they've given it a major visual update to celebrate the milestone. So if you open Chrome or have opened it lately, you may notice tabs look a little different. The search bar has some rounding to it and things like that. So there's a different vibe when you're working in Google Chrome with that design difference. You're seeing those kind of changes kind of throughout the Google suite. I know Gmail updated and other tools that Google have updated in this way as well. But more than that, they have upped the ante on password management. So you can have Chrome create passwords for you and save them in the cloud and access your passwords at passwords.google.com. So you want to be logged in the browser for that capability and for syncing to other browsers on different computers that you may use. But password saving may be beginning to compete with LastPass for the features that they have. They mentioned in the article Picture in Picture the fact that you can start a YouTube video and have it playing easily in a different video window, a small pop-out window, while you continue browsing in the main window. Certainly, I think we've been doing that by pulling the tab out and having it separate that way, but this is more of a built-in capability. Chrome is now using less Flash, so moving more and more away from Flash. Adobe has announced the end of life for Flash in 2020, so it says only 8% of Chrome users visit Flash sites, so only 8% over a billion users. That's still a lot of people, but hopefully websites are getting away from using Flash. And there's other things listed here as well. There's gesture support, so more for touch screens and trackpads and things like that. You can search across open tabs. I mentioned this one to my husband. He's known for having like 25 tabs open all the time. So now when you search, it'll tell you by a little icon next to the search results whether it is a Google result or a tab result. So you can tell if it's just identifying you already have a tab open for that. And then the last thing listed were lots of new and updated code support. So just lots of geeky API kind of stuff that developers will make use of in Chrome and do even more with it. So exciting to see the visual updates and some of the other things that are in the newest version of Chrome.
Yeah, because these browsers kind of dominate our workday, these changes do make a difference. And I would be somewhat lost without Chrome. I really like the bookmark syncing, so I'm always signed in with my account, and just makes life a little bit easier. So,
yep, I've had experiences with different computers recently, new computers on the work side, and my home computer crashed and started over there, and it was really nice to log into my Chrome browser and have everything come right up for me in terms of my bookmarks. It's a great feature.
All right, good.
And one more little newsy thing, and it ties back to a pick of the week for me from maybe about a month ago. I talked about the YouVersion Bible Lens app, which was new but only available for iOS. And this is the app where you can take a photo from your camera, and it'll actually suggest Bible passages that will pair well with the photo and allow you to, you know, do different layout with the lettering and typography types and stuff like that. Really neat app to with the intelligence they've built into it to kind of come up with Bible passages to go with your pictures. But like I said, when I announced it a month or so ago, it was only available for iOS. This week, our friends at Live Church have announced the Android version of that app. Bible Lens is now available for Android. You can find it in the Google Play Store, and we'll also have a link in our Wells Tech show notes over at wellstech.wells.net.
Very nice. Neat, neat feature. I really like this. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our Wells Now segment.
And maybe this isn't quite now. It's an event that's happening in the future, but we wanted to make mention once again of a conference that's coming up next June in Wisconsin Dells. It's the Wells EdTech Lead Summit. And this is the next generation of the Wells Tech Conference we held back in 2015, Martin. And I'm just super excited to be pairing up with the Lutheran Schools Office to come up with this mega conference that's going to have so much good stuff. We just recently announced to our presenters, those that have been selected, and I believe the count is something like 70 different presenters. We'll have 77 wow. session slots, a full day of pre-conference, and even in the evening, pre-conference activities. We're just packed with a lot of goodness, and we want you to mark it on your calendar, June 25th through 27th, 2019. Head over to wellsedtechlead.com to sign up for the newsletter if you haven't done so already. We're pushing out, you know, more and more about the conference all the time. I had a meeting just today to talk about the registration process, and we're looking forward to that being available probably around Christmas time is when we'll open up registration for the conference. The conference is being held at the premier water park resort hotel in Wisconsin Dells, the Kalahari, and we have an amazing price for those that attend. I believe the room rate is $159 a night, and that includes, I think, up to four people with water park passes. And so, you know, this is a family destination for you where you can take part in all this great conference activity as well as all the fun things to do at the Kalahari. So definitely make plans to attend.
You go, girl. Really selling it this week.
Yeah,
nice.
I can't wait. I'm excited. I actually already have RV reservations in Wisconsin Dells for those dates. So I'm ready.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week. And mine is actually a blog post I came across not that long ago, and it rang a bell with me because we had talked about this on the show. It is titled How to Add Captions or Subtitles to Video. And it's not been that long ago, Martin, that someone wrote in and asked us to bring us up to speed on adding captions and things. And I think maybe we'll have a show this fall sometime where we actually walk through some of the process of captioning videos. But there is a very large audience of deaf and hearing impaired people who need to be reached with all of our great gospel outreach materials. And captioning is the way to go to do that. And I know sometimes YouTube can automatically add captions, and you can go in and tweak those. There's lots of different ways to do it. But this article is from our friends at TechSmith. They're the people behind Camtasia and Snagit software. And Camtasia is just an amazing video editor already. But then following the instructions in this article, you'll be able to add captioning for those that are hearing impaired. So check it out. And if you're captioning currently, maybe your sermon video or whatever it is, we'd love to see examples of congregations that are making use of captioning on your videos.
Very nice. I just heard the other day, speaking of captioning, that Microsoft's video service, which is really only available to Office 365 users, but I know there are some schools and churches out there that use it, is they're going to be able to transcribe videos now. So they there's a button you can press and it'll play the video and basically do a transcription of it, which would allow then searchability, which is kind of cool because we do of our training videos, you know, in that service, and it would be nice to be able to search through the transcripts of those without having to write the transcripts ourselves. So technology is coming, and this is just another example of that. So cool. All right, my pick of the week is related to, and I believe I talked about this maybe a couple weeks ago, maybe even last week, my love for the trackpad on computers. I don't use a mouse much anymore. I prefer, if it's a good trackpad, I'd prefer to use a trackpad. So I kind of switch back and forth between Mac and PC, and both of those have good trackpads. The only challenge with a trackpad for a trackpad user, at least in my opinion, is the click and drag method, because you're really needing two fingers to do that. And sometimes, depending on how good the trackpad is or what shape your hand is in, if you're getting, you know, early onsets of carpal tunnel or things, motion ramifications, sometimes that's not the most easy thing to do, and sometimes it's inaccurate, and so there are actual settings that you can change, both on the Windows side and on the Mac side, to make that better. Actually, it's under accessibility, I think, on the Mac side, where instead of click and drag, so you know, with two fingers, so you're tapping and then holding and then moving with your other finger, you can actually tell the Mac to say, whenever I am tapping on something and moving with three fingers, that's what my tap and drag motion would be. So there's no two-finger dance you have to do. You just set three fingers on the surface, and away it goes, which works really well. You can do that for moving windows around. You can do that for highlighting text. Those kinds of things all work with that. And unfortunately, you can't do the exact same thing, at least without an add-on for Windows. They have an equivalent, though. They call it double tap and drag. So if you're tapping on the header bar or a piece of text, you can tap once and then tap twice quickly, but then hold it, and that will tell Windows that, hey, you want it to click and drag. So it's the same thing as holding down the left mouse button and moving your mouse. That's what these two motions do, three-finger on the Mac and double tap and drag on Windows. And we'll have a couple of excellent support articles on the show notes page that will walk you through that. But I'd encourage you to give it a try. It takes a little bit of getting used to after all these years of using a mouse or kind of the two-finger thing that you got to do on a trackpad. But once you get the hang of it, it really does save a little bit of stress, and both stress on your hand, but also mental stress when you don't always have it exactly right, or you lift one finger up too soon, or you move too fast, or you run out of trackpad space. You're trying to drag it across the trackpad, and you started only halfway across. You need to start all the way across. So lots of benefits here if you give it a couple weeks, and then see if it's made a difference for you. So that's my pick of the week, or tip of the week in this case.
Good stuff. I was temporarily...
And you have no comment because you have sworn off trackpads.
I suppose that can be my response. I actually was temporarily disconnected and missed a lot of what you said. I'm sorry about that. But I'm back now.
It was excellent content.
I know it was. I'm converted. I'm going to go trackpad all the way. Who knows?
Awesome. All right. With that shiny new laptop you have, maybe the trackpad's even
maybe
better.
Maybe it will. It even has one of those little eraser nubs. Kind of things. Yeah. We'll
see. I don't know what they call that, but interesting. I never got the hang of those.
Yeah.
Never liked them. All right. We are up to our ministry resource for the week. And lo and behold, it's about bullet journaling and OneNote. And lo and behold, I created a video. So rather than writing this all out or whatever, I thought, well, maybe I'll just demonstrate how I use OneNote and how I've married that with the iPad and bullet journaling. So about an 11-minute video on bullet journaling with OneNote. It's a good overview of OneNote in general. So, you know, it's worth the price of admission there as well. So if you're interested in bullet journaling or using OneNote to kind of amp up your productivity game, I created a video for you. So that's our ministry resource.
Excellent. And we have one piece of community feedback to share today. This is from Roman Johnson, who sent me a link to the best Microsoft Office templates for teachers. And I was really excited to get this just because there's a lot of this we probably hadn't even thought of that we could do with different Office products. Things like emergency contact lists, student information sheets, volunteer sign up, syllabus layouts, attendance workbooks. So if you want to do weekly attendance or monthly attendance, and then different formats for lesson planning as well. So, definitely check this out. It's a long list, and I think you'll find some nuggets here. Even if you aren't an Office user, it might give you ideas for things to create in your Google Docs, because you can bring all these Office templates into there as well. So check it out. Thanks, Roman, for the link, and best wishes on the new school year to all our teachers that are listeners.
Very nice. If you want to contribute to the show, as Roman did, you can do so by going to our show notes page. We've mentioned it numerous times. WellsTech.wells.net is the web location. That's where we live and hang out, and that's where our content is. You can send us an email. Just put an at sign in there, WellsTech@wells.net. If you get your way over to the show notes page, also you can find all the social media that we are partaking in these days, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Pinterests, etc. So that's all along that top row on the upper right-hand side of the page. So we would love it if you would contribute to the show, and we could share your question, your comment, your suggestion, your tip, your pick, whatever it is. So feel free to do that.
Yep. Let us hear from you. Martin, do you have a video to share with our listeners this week?
I do. I'm really excited this week. It's kind of it's a review type video and happens to be on OneNote, kind of a OneNote heavy show today. Sorry about that, everybody. But this is from The Paperless Student. And so it's actually a med student, I believe, that does these reviews on going digital. So you guess that she does a lot of note-taking, and OneNote is her app of choice, but she uses a bunch of stuff, and she's always looking for, you know, the best one. And I just ran across these the other day. So it's not a super professional review, but kind of down home, just like your cousin doing a review, is kind of the sense that I got. She has a two-part review. We got the first part here. 2018 full review of OneNote by Paperless Student. She doesn't have a huge following, but so she's not out for the glory, but I think she just wants to share her kind of honest review of a pretty heavy note taker. And you can tell if you watch the video of her experiences with the tool. So, and I think she's on an iPad as well, so you get a double dose there. So that's our video of the week.
Good stuff.
Sally, what are we going to do next week?
We are coming back to record once again with a focus on worship media. And we're talking all kinds of different angles of that. You know, what kind of software is out there for projecting worship service components, and maybe some of the setups and things that people use to do that. And then the type of content that people use or can find on the web, stock type content that might help with that worship media. And to go along with that, we're really excited to have members of the church band Koine join us as they talk about their new adventure in worship media. It's called Koine Worship Media, and we're going to hear all about that in next week's show.
Very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. That's going to do it for this week's show, and we really do wish that you join us for 567 and that worship media-focused show that Sally just mentioned. And we're so appreciative of your time and your willingness to be a part of Wells Tech, and hope you'll tune in next week. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.